You're listening to Zen Crossing, where spirituality meets everyday life, with your host, Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center.
Today's theme is maintaining a spiritual practice after a life-changing injury. My guest today is Stephen Black. Stephen was born and raised in the Seattle area. He graduated with a degree in French language from Whitworth University in Spokane on the day that Mount St. Helens erupted. That's why he tells me he graduated magma cum laude from college. He also attended the University of Toulouse in France, studying language and culture. Stephen started his own graphic design firm in the San Francisco Bay Area in 1982 and has been working, I might add, quite successfully in that field ever since. He started a meditation practice while living in the Bay Area and moved to Vashon Island in 1994. Joined the Puget Sound Zen Center in 2008. Stephen's just recently relocated to Portland, Oregon, but looks for any excuse to come back and visit us here. Stephen, thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Stephen, you had years ago a life-changing injury. Could you tell our audience about it?
Absolutely. In 2006, I was doing a lot of business in Europe with my clients there, and I developed a blood clot from air travel, which resulted in a massive stroke. I lost the use of left side of my body, but through a lot of physical therapy, I was able to relearn to walk slowly with a cane and eventually even drive again and live independently. So I'm very grateful for that.
What was your spiritual practice before you had the stroke?
I was brought up in a loving Christian household and was very involved in the church life, youth groups, growing up, pretty much my life oriented around that church life for me. But I found myself drawn more and more to quietude and contemplation. I started to go on private silent meditation retreats at a Kamal Dalis monastery in Big Sur a couple of times a year, and continued to pursue my leanings towards Eastern philosophy and religion, and eventually finding different Zen centers, one in the Bay Area and then on to Vashon.
And then how about in the immediate aftermath of the stroke? What was your spiritual practice like then, would you say?
It was mostly confusion, but there was also a deep sense of gratitude for having survived. I mean, I knew that I kind of had dodged a bullet, so to speak, although a little worse for wear. But primarily, it was just kind of trying to figure out which way was up. I really focused on trying not to go down the road of asking why me and identifying as a victim, because that's sort of a dead end if you do that, and then you just can't assimilate back into a functioning life if you just see yourself as your disability or the event that happened to you.
Was that hard?
It was hard, yeah, because on one hand, you do sort of wonder why me, but you have to find a way through somehow. I remember when I was, I think I was still in ICU, and a friend came to visit me, and, you know, she looked at me and kind of shook her head, and, you know, going, wow, you really did it. And I remember saying, you know, right now I really, really feel like I could use a strong spiritual teacher. And I quoted that saying that said, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And she laughed and looked at me, and she goes, well, the teacher has appeared. And I looked at her kind of not understanding, and she goes, it's your stroke. And I thought for a second, well, yeah, but really what went through my head was, oh, crap. That's not quite what I had in mind.
Not the kind of teacher I had in mind.
No, not at all. But in fact, it truly was, I think, the teacher that I needed at that point in my life. I wasn't living very consciously. And I certainly had a wake-up call there. And that's really what Zen has been for me. It's all about waking up.
Would you say that's the primary way that the stroke has been your teacher?
I think so, yeah. The waking up aspect manifests itself in a lot of different ways. But for me, very physically, obviously, because, you know, I was in a wheelchair for the first couple of years, I think. Eventually finding my way back to some sort of vertical way of being in the world, but also that forced sense of slowing down, which I think is really critical, probably for all of us in some respect, because our culture and our world really promotes the idea of multitasking and, you know, keeping up with the spin of life. And then we're just constantly bombarded all the time with digital stimulus, you know, checking email constantly and just the swirling maelstrom of noise that goes on all the time. And for me, this enforced slowing down was really a great wake-up call and something that I've learned to appreciate. And even now when I go somewhere with someone and I'm walking slowly, I often apologize for going so slow. And pretty much everybody says, you know, it's really nice walking slower. And so I think that's something for us all to pay attention to. And even now I have to remind myself to go even slower and not get caught up in the hurly-burly of life.
Yeah. Speaking of now, what is your spiritual practice like now?
Well, after I moved to Portland, I started visiting most of the Zen centers down there, and I have plugged into one now, Brightway Zen, which I like a lot. And I attend service there and practice 2 times a week, and then I have my daily practice of sitting Zazen every morning. And fortunately, over time, that's become a pattern and a routine for me that I really rely on. Trying to start the day. Even when I have a rushed day, I try to even sit for 5 minutes just to orient myself to that internal compass that I want to drive my life. And even just a few minutes of intentionality makes a huge difference in the way that I move through my day and the way that I interact with everybody that I encounter.
Yeah, nice. Stephen, you know, sitting meditation in a Zen environment can be pretty demanding physically. Holding a posture for long stretches of time. And I should say that Stephen is a frequent attender of our multi-day retreats where we sit for hours every day. Tell me, what calls you to this particular practice, which is so physical, and what inspires you to keep going?
I guess I'm called by that deep-rooted sense of masochism that I can't seem to shake. No, it is, as you point out, it is a very physical practice. But that's something that I've really learned to appreciate over the years, because it's not just an intellectual passive exercise where you drop in once a week and are instructed with some things. It's very visceral. You have to, in order to sit strong, you have to really show up and kind of get your body and your mind going in the same direction to be able to sit strong Zazen. And the benefits of that have been really quite strong for me. So I think that's a motivation for continuing to go forward with it.
Yeah, I'm happy to hear that the benefits have been strong. I wonder what the hardest moments have been for you. There must have been moments where it's been just difficult to keep going with the practice.
Well, the physical aspect sometimes, especially initially, was quite difficult for me. Trying to learn how to cope with pain in general and a body that was quite foreign to me all of a sudden. It didn't obey what I wanted it to do. So even getting comfortable or getting down on the cushion, things like that, became quite prohibitive. And over time, as you know, I've sat in chairs and on a kneeling stool and things like that. But, you know, the pain is something to, you know, we all deal with some aspects of pain from day to day, whether that's physical or even emotional. And all that stuff shows up pretty much uninvited when you get quiet, when you sit down on the cushion. But the pain, physical pain, for me, at first it was scary to think about, okay, how am I going to get through this next half an hour or hour, whatever the duration of it might be, or through the day. So there's sort of a fear that can crop up, you know, can I do it? And what will people think if I can't? You know, there's all that head stuff that you play with yourself. You know, you kind of, what will people say if I have to bail at some point? And one of the Sangha members one time when it was checking in with me after a long sit, and I mentioned that, you know, I didn't want to bail because I felt kind of stupid and ashamed for having done that. And she said, well, you know, that too. That's one of your demons you got to deal with. And that was actually quite good advice. It was good observation. So I sat for the next period thinking about what that was about for me. Why was I so worried about what people would think if I couldn't sit that duration? And then all of a sudden, while I was kind of cogitating on that, the bell rang and that next period was over and I'd gotten through it. Not that I was intending on thinking about that the whole time, but it did prove to me that a lot of the way we perceive pain is just in our heads. And that's not diminish, you know, what's really going on physically for somebody, because some pain is just almost insurmountable. But the more we resist it and push back against it, the more strength it draws and the harder it is to cope.
Yeah. Stephen, I wonder whether you have any advice for people who may be in a sangha on how to welcome somebody with an injury or disability to their worship or practice space, and what the most helpful things are that somebody could do, or are there things that you'd advise people not to do?
That's a really interesting question, because those things do come up. I think the most important thing would be for, in order to welcome somebody into that space of worship or a retreat or whatever, is to see them as the individuals that they are and not as the disabilities that they happen to possess. Because that's something that anybody who is disabled or has something physically wrong with them, or perhaps even mentally in some way that you know that other people can tell, you feel not necessarily discriminated against, but you feel different. Mm-hmm. And the last thing, you know, we want to do is feel different, really. You want to kind of fit in. So having somebody being welcomed in just for who they are and not focusing on whatever the particular infirmity might be goes a long way.
Stephen, what's next for you in your spiritual practice?
You know, at some point, I'd really like to do some training at a monastery. And that is where I have some fear around the physical limitations I might have, because it is very aggressive and things. So I'd like to do that and possibly head towards lay ordination.
Sounds good. Stephen, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.